I'll have it all on slides. The title of this morning's message is The Fig Tree. I shouldn't have said that because it's in my text, but I did. As you know, I script when I do a message, and then I color code it to help me. So for the month of September, we speakers, the people that speak here, Micah, myself, Rick, Brian, now again, have decided to have the topic about the second coming, a.k.a. the return of Christ. What does a.k.a. stand for? Also known as, or alias known as? Also known as. I want the also known as. So the second coming and the return of Christ are the same thing. That's what I was trying to get at. The reason is because, for the month of September, the reason is because quite a few people think that season, or that time of year is when this will occur in the fall of the year. And that's what we're heading into right now, to the fall of the year. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot the pencils. Want to come and get them? I told them that they had to pay attention for the opening. And they were patiently waiting for the pencils. That's all right. So a lot of people believe that the fall of the year is when the return of Christ will happen. The time of the year, not necessarily the date of his return, but the time of the year. We can know the seasons. We can't know the day or the hour, but we can know the season. The Bible tells us that. And many people believe that Jesus will return in the fall of the year. So I've chosen the parable of the fig tree as a center point of my message this morning, which might surprise Micah because I told him something different. And so that's how that goes. We kind of talk about what we're going to talk about so that we don't try to run over each other's feet too much. So I think it's easy to read the Bible and read past some of the experiences and the culture the writers and authors used in their metaphors and as part of their everyday lives. So we can read the Bible and see these details and just go right past them and not really realize what we're reading or even try to picture what it's actually talking about. It's pretty easy to read past and then try to find the point you're looking for in the text instead of what the whole story is. For us now, most people don't know much about food. What's that got to do with it? Especially because nowadays the small farm, in this country anyway, no longer exists. Carl can probably tell you that because he worked for one. He worked for a farm last year. How many acres did they farm? Yeah, that's not a small farm. 15,000 acres is not a small farm. But the 200, 100, 50-acre farms don't exist anymore because the people can't make a living at it. So the whole, I want to say, society changes more than you know because of that, or more than you would think. The small farm no longer exists. Most people think food comes from the store. It comes from the store. You know what I mean? There's this store and it just has food. That's all there is to it. And meat comes from a package. If you want meat, you just go to the meat package place and they have meat. They have no idea about the association of the product and where it came from. That association is skewed in our world now. Most kids don't really know what they're eating. And I think that's why people are so wasteful nowadays. This is one of my pet peeves, especially when it comes to food. I hate it when people throw food away. I just think to myself, you can't do that. Somebody had to buy that or something like that. You just can't throw the food away. Especially double pet peeve when it's meat. If people throw meat away, don't you understand the sacrifice that the animal made? And you're just going to throw it away? If you think about that for a minute, the meat did not come just from the store. But I think the idea and the mindset is that it comes from the store and that's all there is. So people don't really understand that. And I think society has caused some of that, some because of the big farm and less rural life, but I don't know what other reasons would be, but that's enough of my pet peeves on the food stuff, so we won't talk about that anymore. I already have high blood pressure, and I don't need more. So our mindset does come from sometimes not really understanding where things come from. What's that got to do with the sermon? I don't know. Anyway, a little background information about our subject, the fig tree. The fig tree has been used since the beginning of man's time. Remember back in the garden, after Adam and Eve sinned? Do you remember that story? Ding, ding, ding. And Genesis 3:7 says, this was after they sinned. Then it was as if their eyes were opened. They saw things differently. They saw that they were naked, so they were naked before this. So they got some fig leaves, sewed them together, and wore them for clothes. Can you imagine? I don't know why they used fig leaves. Maybe fig leaves were bigger than some of the other leaves. I don't know. I don't know if that was necessary or not either. I don't know. But did you know, here's a bit of trivia. Remember you learned things here? Did you know that of all creation, in the whole creation story, fig tree is the only plant named, and it's there. But they did choose fig leaves. It would have been cool in this message if Noah's dove brought back a fig leaf when at the end of the flood, you know, he was waiting for the water to go down. Wouldn't it be cool if he brought back a fig leaf for this message? But it didn't. Do you know what kind of a leaf it was? Anybody? It was an olive leaf. Yeah, it wasn't a fig leaf at all. It was an olive leaf. Proverbs 27:18 says, he who tends his fig tree will eat its fruit. In case you don't know what a fig tree looks like, there's one. This is a fig tree, maybe in the Middle East. It looks like it could be. That's what a fig tree looks like. So as you travel through the Bible, fig trees and vines are a symbol of prosperity and well-being. Sitting under your fig tree or vine implies that you have peace and safety along with well-being. So it's equated with pleasant things, I want to say, that you're satisfied, that you're calm, and it's all peaceful. Fig trees are very vigorous growers. I don't know if you knew that or not. And I thought I was going to find something different. I thought I was going to find that fig trees were real meticulous and you had to do certain things at certain times to make them grow and produce and it would be hard to do. But I found the opposite. So I even learned things. I thought it would be a difficult thing, but it isn't. They're very vigorous growers. And they usually produce fruit in 1 to 2 years after you plant them. And the typical fig trees are from 10 feet high to 30 feet high. So if you're gonna pick the fruit, you gotta go get up there a little bit ways up. Did you know what fig trees look like when they have fruit? I can tell you guys are up on your figs. This is a variety of big figs. So there are probably at least 25 varieties of fig trees. This one has big figs. That's a big tree, too. That's what it looks like when the fig tree produces fruit, this variety. It's kind of ugly looking, but that's what it looks like. Figs are one of the snacks that Jesus would have had either on his way home from school or when he got home. Do you think Jesus went to school? Took the bus and or a chariot, took the chariot to school. And when he gets home, "Oh, Mom, I'm home. What's for snack?" I remember that five times over again. That's what our house was like. "Mom, I'm home. What's for our snack?" And then she yells back, "Oh, there's some figs in the cupboard." So he'd have to go to the cupboard and get figs. Or if he was walking home from school, he would just pick one off of a tree when he was walking by and eat that. Well, to help you remember our lesson today, I want to share with you one of those snacks Jesus would have eaten, figs. So now it's snack time. So Elijah and Alex, these aren't figs. These are dates. The reason we have some dates in there, these are fresh dates. The reason we have some dates in there is because we don't know the date that Jesus is coming back. We might know the season. So I have in this in my little, you didn't come up. I noticed that. So I've prepared some figs here. They're cut in half, except for the dates. The dried figs have a toothpick in them. You can try one. You were going to pass these out. You can eat one, but pass them out first. Man, they're hungry. What is with these kids? So, I had never had a fresh fig until a couple days ago. So, I want to tell you about the different figs before you pass them out. Wait. The middle ones are the fresh figs. The ones that are ugliest looking on one side that are dry and they have like white crusties on them and they're, yeah, that one. Those are soft dried figs. And the other ones are hard dried figs that are on the other side of the fresh fruit. Okay, now you can pass them out. So, yeah, the big ones you just pick up. It's a half a fig. Ben, can you get some napkins in case somebody has to spit theirs out? And again, there are some fresh dates in there. I never even saw these before. I went to the store the other day. This is a fresh date, and you just eat it. It's like an apple, only there's a grape seed in the middle. Well, it's not a grape seed. It's a date pit, but I didn't even know you could eat fresh dates. I hope you can. You want to try one?
Yeah.
There's a seed in the middle. The seed is big. It's this big. Now, the figs are very, very sweet. And the dried ones have sugar on the outside that comes out of the fruit and crystallizes. That's how sweet they are. Did anyone need a napkin to spit theirs in? So this is a snack that Jesus would have had when he's walking around, and you could see the trees were very plentiful. And I'm imagining that they would just pick one. Carter wants one over there. The fresh ones are good, but those soft dried ones are really good. They're all good. It's all good. And I'll put them on the table back there. Well, you can. You can set the trays on the table by the donuts and see which is more popular, figs or donuts. I'm having a feeling it's going to be the figs. But have you ever read the stories about the figs in the Bible? Have you eaten a fresh fig before today? Maybe some of you have. I haven't. I mean, I did a couple days ago, but in preparation and stuff, trying to find them. And they have a very short shelf life, only like 6 days or so for the fresh. But the dried ones, I think that's why there are so many dried figs, because they do have a short shelf life as far as fresh goes. So, back to business. Hosea 9:10 says, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your forefathers as the earliest fruit on the fig tree in its first season. But they came to Baal Peor and devoted themselves to shame, and they became as detestable as that which they loved. That's Hosea 9:10. And it's in the verse we find out that Israel is metaphorically the fig tree. That's what it says right there. I saw your forefathers as the earliest fruit on the fig tree. So that's how God compared Israel. He used a fig tree to portray the early people that were righteous in Israel. And as you read on in the verse, you see that they became unrighteous. They devoted themselves to shame. And if you think about the story of Israel, how they started out good and then went bad, so bad they were taken into captivity, that's kind of what that verse is saying there. But when they were good, they were the fig tree. They changed and they were pruned. They turned detestable. So there's a lesson in that for us too. Don't change to bad because you'll be pruned. So one of the things about the fig tree is that they have more than one season in a year. And I don't know of another tree that does have two seasons or more of fruit on the same tree in a year or a growing season. I know that variety and climate and growing conditions can cause or vary any kind of a crop, but figs generally have two crops a year. The first crop is called the berba, which I think is a Spanish word. It's the berba crop, and it grows on the old wood of the tree, not the new. Remember I said that the trees were what kind of growers? They were fast growers. They were, it's an aggressive growing plant that grows a lot in a year. I read in one spot they can grow as much as, I think, 5 feet of branch in 1 year. That's a lot of branch in a tree, any kind of a tree thing. But the first crop is grown on the old wood, not the new growth of the tree. And then the main season, or the new wood crop, occurs from late summer to early fall. So you have an early crop off of the old wood of the tree, and then the tree grows like crazy, and it produces fruit as well. But that comes on in the fall. So we sang the song Zacchaeus. Now, Jennifer and I have talked about this song a few times, and a sycamore tree is a maple around here. But there is a fig tree variety called sycamore. So I'm wondering if Zacchaeus didn't climb a fig tree that was called the sycamore fig. I didn't even know there was one existing until this morning. So that is one of the varieties, sycamore fig. So maybe Zacchaeus climbed a fig tree. Can we change the song now? He climbed up in a fig tree. Doesn't sound as good. That's why we sang that song, because it's possible that he climbed a fig tree. So now that we have tried the fresh, this is a joke. So now that we have tried the fresh figs, it would have been on new wood. You can't see how I spelled wood there. It would have been on new wood. So it would have been the late season, the fall season. It would have grown on a new branch this year, not an old branch from last year. So in today's Israel, the first crop is around Passover or spring, around the Jewish holidays. The second one is in September, around the Jewish holidays, the second crop. And it covers three holidays when the figs are ripe. Rosh Hashanah, which is the Feast of the Trumpets. Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement. And the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkoth, which is the Feast of Tabernacles. So three of the, well, Four of the eight Jewish festivals fall during fig season, Passover, and the other three, and the last three, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkoth, which I told you what the different feasts were. So four of the eight feasts are covered in fig season. The parable of the fig tree. Matthew 24 is where it's found. But Matthew 24 begins with Jesus and his disciples looking at the temple and its buildings from the Mount of Olives. So here's some more things. You know, you can read through that and think, okay, they're looking at the temple. Well, the Mount of Olives was a little ways out of town and up. So when they're up there, I don't know how far up the mountain they were, but they could have looked down and seen everything down from up above. But unless you read into this, not read into the story, but pay attention to the story, you might just read past that. So they were looking at the temple and its buildings from the Mount of Olives, and Jesus tells them, he's the one that starts the conversation. He says, not one stone will remain that will not be torn down, as they're looking down at the buildings. And that statement interested the disciples enough to ask. They asked the question, Matthew 24, verse 3. The first couple of verses are talking about them looking down at from the Mount of Olives. And he was sitting at the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So he just got done telling them that all the stones are going to be dismantled from each other on all these buildings that you see. So did the disciples ask two or three questions? Number one is, when will this happen? I can pick out that that's one question. Number two might be, what will be the sign of your coming? And number three, and the end of the age? Is that two or three questions in Matthew 24? That's up for you to study and decide, but I tend to think it's three, but some people think it's two. And then the next 27 verses in Matthew 24 are his answers. He answers the questions. After that, the next 20 verses, or the rest of the chapter, are parables about his return to earth. So all of Matthew 24, and then Matthew 25, the next chapter, is all stories about his return to earth, about things regarding his second coming, different kinds of stories to show different angles about his return. But Matthew 24 has the parable of the fig tree. It's when he gets off of the subject of answering their questions, it's the first story he tells is the parable of the fig tree, Matthew 24. It's going to be in verses 32 to 35. In fact, here it is. Matthew 24, 32 to 35. And this is Jesus telling his disciples just after he told them about how the stones were going to be torn down, or when the stones were going to be torn down. He says, now learn the parable of the fig tree, from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and it puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Seems kind of funny that heaven and earth will pass away. Doesn't seem funny, but it's not something you think of a lot of times. So that's the parable of the fig tree. Is the fig tree Israel in this parable? Remember in Hosea, the fig tree was Israel? Is putting forth its leaves, does that mean a revived Israel, like from 1948? When Israel became a nation again? Remember, up until 1948, it wasn't a nation until a long time ago, before Christ. They were allowed to have some kind of solidarity under the Roman Empire, when Christ was walking on Israel's streets, back when he was a kid, but Rome was in control. Israel wasn't in control. It's been a long time since Israel has been in control, as it talked about in Hosea 9, that their wickedness caused it. Is it talking about the second crop? When it puts forth its leaves, the summer is near because fall makes the second crop. And the first crop being the forefathers out of Hosea 9, verse 10. On top of that, which question is he answering? Those questions that the disciples asked. Studying the Bible makes so many questions. But it also makes you want to find the answers too. So Luke 21, 29 through 33 has, I'm not sure if it's the same account, but it has a parable of the fig tree too. It says, and I'll read them to you, I didn't put it on a slide. So also when you see these things happen, recognize the kingdom of God is near. We're in Luke 21, 29 to 33. So also when you see these things happen, recognize that the kingdom of God is near. That kind of helps answer one of those questions from the other passage, if it's the same account. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away till all things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. In a conference that I was recently at, we talked about generation for a little bit, just a small amount. I've seen from the Bible how generation means 100 years. I've seen from the Bible how generation means 80 years. And I've heard many people say that generation means 40 years. So you have to decide what you want to do. But it says this generation will not pass away till all these things happen. And again, which question are we answering? This fig tree parable reminds me of a passage we went over when we were counseling for baptism recently. And we were talking about death and how long is it? When somebody dies, how long are they dead? That's what we were talking about in the baptism counseling. And how long does it last? Do we wake up? And so this passage is from Job, and the heavens will pass away out of the parable reminded me of these verses. And here's what it says in Job, and this is talking about death, but it's also talking about that time that Jesus is talking about in Matthew 24, because here's what it says. But man expires and lays prostrate. I think that means you lay down, right? Yeah, like that. Or like this. Man expires, and where is he? This is what the Bible is teaching about death, by the way. As water evaporates from the sea, and a river becomes parched and dried up, so man lies down and does not rise until the heavens are no more. He will not awake or be aroused out of his sleep. So it's calling to death sleep. Oh, that you would hide me in Sheol, which is the grave. That you would conceal me until your wrath returns to you. So conceal me until your wrath is over, because I don't want to see it. This is Job speaking. That you would set a limit for me and remember me. And to me, that line is the key to most things. Who else is going to remember you? How many have there been between now and Job? Who are these people? Who knows them? Who knows their names? Where are they? God knows those things. We can't know. But set an alarm for me and remember me. If a man dies, will he live again? And that's a rhetorical question. The answer is yes. All the days of my struggle, I wait until my change comes. I will call, you will call, and I will answer you. You will long for the work of your hands. He's talking to God. You're going to miss me, he's telling God. You will long for the work of your hands. I'm going to want you back. That's part of the resurrection teaching out of the Bible. But what we had in 24 of Matthew, it says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. And what we have in Job is, so man lies down and does not rise until the heavens are no longer. So there's an exception. Man will rise, but when the heavens are no longer. And it's talking about that same thing as in Matthew 24. So Job was looking for that same time that we're looking for that's written in Matthew 24. Job was in our heaven and earth. 2 Peter 3 mentions that there are three heavens and earths, and they're not stacked up like this. They're stacked up in time. The first one was the one before the flood. That was, I'm going to say this is history, this is present, this is future. That's how the heavens and earths are. They're stacked up in time. The first heaven and earth was before the flood. This one, which would imply second, is the one we live in. It's also the one Job lived in because Job was after the flood. So it seems weird, but Job and us are in the same heaven and earth. Seems remote from me, but it's not. That's not what the Bible says. The first one is before the flood. Job was after the flood. The third one happens at the day of the Lord. If you want to learn more about that subject or research it more, 2 Peter 3, 1 through 13 covers that subject. Those are the verses that I took that from. 2 Peter 3, 1 through 13. It's a really good spot to get a handle on the ages and God's plan. So heaven and earth do pass away. They passed away at the flood. They're going to pass away at the day of the Lord. So then Job can resurrect, as what he was looking for in Job, and also those who are called the Lord's. So what should we do? Since we know these things, be on your guard. This is the immediate verses following the parable of the fig tree out of Luke. So this is what we're supposed to do. Be on your guard that your hearts will not be weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and the worries of life. And that day will not come upon you suddenly like a trap. The word like a trap has always stuck in my mind. That Jesus' return is like a can be like a trap. If you're not ready for it, it is a trap. I don't know if animals realize when they get into a trap that they just got into a trap and they think, oh no, I'm in a trap. They can't get out. This is the same kind of a thing. If we're not ready, it's like a trap. For it will come upon all those who dwell on the face of the earth. That doesn't really exclude anyone. Everyone is in that boat or realm. Jesus is coming back for everyone, not just for those that are his. Don't let it be a trap. But keep on the alert at all times, praying that you may have the strength to escape all these things that are about to take place and stand before the Son of Man. How is that going to be, standing before the Son of Man? With the accuser on one side telling the judge all the things that you have done wrong, what will Christ say? Will he say, oh, don't worry about it, I've got this guy? That's what he says to those people who accept him. And in that day when Jesus comes, this is the promise that we have to look forward to. And it will come about, and this is from Micah 4, 1 through 4. It will come about in the last days that the mountain of the house of the Lord, that the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief to the mountains. It will be raised above the hills. This is in Jerusalem. And peoples will stream to it. I think peoples is plural in this case, but it's kind of weird. Many nations will come and say, come and let us go to the mountain of the Lord and to the house of Jacob, which is Israel, the house of Israel, because Jacob's name was turned to Israel, that he may teach us about his ways and that we may walk in his paths. Even the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, for from Zion will go forth the law, even the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and he will judge between many peoples. And it's when we talk about the kingdom and the saints will rule with Christ, that's what it's talking about. He judges the people of the nations, the saints, the resurrected, help him do that. And they will render decisions for mighty distant nations. Then they will hammer their swords into plowshares. That's a peaceful act. Taking your sword and make it into an implement of gardening. They will hammer their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation. We're not there yet, are we? Never again will they train for war. Each of them will sit under his vine and under his fig tree with no one to make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. Each of them will sit under his vine and under his fig tree, the ultimate thing of peace. I'd like us to close with a song this morning. Let's stand and sing 502. And it's talking about that day when Jesus returns. 502.